This is Business Beat. Welcome. Here each week, KBIA takes a look at the business and economic issues facing Mid-Missouri. I'm Christopher Husted. When it comes to the business of food, there's a rivalry around every corner. You've got fights for prime farmland, wars over water use, even buying food at the grocery store as it's competition with household bills encroaching on family budgets for the shopping list. In Missouri, more than 56,000 kids qualify for the Buddy Pack program. It's a program that sends a backpack of nutritious food home with students from low-income families every weekend. This past year, though, the program's taken a big hit. KBIA's Aaron Dismeyer has more on how communities are responding to this setback.
It's Monday morning at the Food Bank of Central and Northeast Missouri. That means volunteers from the First Presbyterian Church of Columbia are putting together packs for the Buddy Pack program. The volunteers chat while putting together bags of Rice Krispies, granola bars, and peanut butter. Joe Weston has been coming with the group for 3 years.
It seems like a terrific program to have some measure of food for kids on weekends who might otherwise go wanting for it.
This program, however, faced serious cuts at the beginning of this year.
Well, it was the makings of a perfect storm.
Peggy Kirkpatrick is executive director of the food bank and says everything that could go wrong for the program did go wrong back in January. The food bank lost one of its biggest donors last year. Then, the cost of food used in the Buddy Packs increased between 15% and 30%, in part because of increased gas prices. Finally, a national failed peanut crop caused the price of peanut butter, one of the central items in the packs, to increase 50%.
The food bank went through about $400,000 in reserves just in the last quarter of 2011, trying to stop the free fall.
The first was an initiative called Adopt a Buddy. While the initiative got the program through the school year without having to cut kids from the program, it wasn't enough to sustain it. Kirkpatrick says last year the program was in 138 schools, feeding more than 8,600 students, and now they only serve 127 schools, helping 6,700 kids a week. However, this isn't all because of the food bank's financial situation. Kirkpatrick says several schools opted out of the program on their own.
When a community is empowered to take care of their own kids, that's the best you can hope for.
Several communities began fully funding their own programs and have also been able to provide more students with food. Dan Height is a part of the Ministerial Alliance in Scotland County, where community members took the program into their own hands.
If there is a need, people have a real heart to step up and see that need met.
The Ministerial Alliance teamed up with the school districts and local organizations to fully support the program through food drives and other donations. Height says making the Buddy Pack program a local effort will be better received in a community like theirs.
Being able to get people closer to the source of help is a lot easier to get people involved than simply saying, would you be willing to write a check for this amount?
Still, Height says it's too soon to tell how Scotland County will be able to handle supporting the program on its own.
And we'll just have to see how everyone responds. Maybe we won't be able to give a Buddy Pack every week, but maybe we could do it every other week.
Kirkpatrick says the food bank will continue the Adopt-A-Buddy initiative and are still looking for more donor support.
As people understand how efficient we are and effective we are, and they start seeing their local numbers, people are jumping on board and partnering with us, which is awesome.
Recently, the food bank has seen donations from Subway, Walmart, and MU alum and ESPN's John Anderson, in total giving over $50,000 to the Buddy Pack program. In the meantime, for members of the First Presbyterian Church of Columbia, Monday will still be Buddy Pack Day. Aaron Dismeyer, KBIA News.
In another food fight, we have farmers versus weeds. In this clash, the farmers seem to have had the advantage thanks to the herbicide Roundup. But now weeds are beginning to catch up, and farmers are using more chemicals to try to stay ahead. Grant Gerlach of Harvest Public Media has more on how Roundup-resistant weeds are changing the game.
When genetically engineered Roundup-ready crops came on the scene in the mid-1990s, they made weed control a relative walk in the park. The idea was you spray your fields with one herbicide, and the crops live, but the weeds die. By 2011, more than 90% of soybeans and cotton and more than 70% of corn were planted with Roundup-ready seeds.
It was so simple and forgiving and flexible, and there weren't a lot of risk involved with it, and it worked really well.
That's Chuck Benbrook, a researcher with the Center for Sustaining Agriculture and Natural Resources at Washington State University. Benbrook says in the early years, farmers were able to use less herbicide overall by using more Roundup. But in a new study, Benbrook finds that changed as weeds started to adapt.
The so-called herbicide-tolerant, Roundup-ready corn, soybeans, and cotton has driven up herbicide use by about 527 million pounds over this 16-year period.
We called Monsanto about the study. That's the company that makes Roundup, but we didn't hear back. Benbrook says farmers relied too heavily on Roundup, and now it isn't killing weeds the way it used to. Farmers like Ron Pavelka near Hastings in central Nebraska are noticing. Most of Pavelka's crops are Roundup ready and have been since the seeds became available.
Before there were Roundup ready soybeans, weed control in soybeans was always an issue for producers. There were a lot of different options, but nothing that really worked as well as a Roundup application.
But these days, Pavelka, who's also on the Nebraska Soybean Board, says Roundup alone isn't working. Like many farmers, Pavelka is adding other herbicides to the mix to finish the job. He also started spraying fields in the fall to help keep weeds down. Still, a few are slipping through the cracks. Across the Midwest, a handful of weeds are forming pockets of resistance.
For Iowa and most of our surrounding states, water hemp is the number one weed.
Bob Hartzler is an agronomist and weed specialist at Iowa State University.
A giant ragweed is another native plant that's adapting to corn and soybeans. It's the number one problem in states like Ohio, Indiana.
Hartzler says farmers can manage resistant weeds for now by going back to some of the chemicals they used before Roundup came along. But he says that does not address a fundamental problem. Plants like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed have become very good at adapting to whichever herbicides farmers choose. And Hartzler says conventional farming plays to their comfort zone.
I like to say that you couldn't sit down and design a better system for weeds to adapt to. We're relying almost entirely on herbicides. We're growing two crops with the same life cycle, and weeds just thrive under that system.
One thing is for sure, weeds will continue to adapt. The question is what farmers will do to stay one step ahead. I'm Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
That wraps up Business Beat this week. Check out KBIA.org to see these stories and more. I'm Christopher Husted. Thanks for listening.
Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one.